Here's J.P. Morosi from Fox Sports and now MLB Network.
How's it going, guys?
Good, J.P. How are you?
Very good, very good. Thanks for having me on the show. And, hey, this is I will pay a little bit of attention to the U.S. Open. Of course, it's on Fox here in the States, so we're very excited about this. I'll be honest, I don't really follow major golf for the most part, but this time I'll make an exception.
Did you get your Stanley Cup final pick correct?
I did, actually. And Ken, thank you for asking, by the way, because I did predict Blackhawks in six. I will humbly say that wasn't it a few months ago where I had said that Babcock was going to go to the Leafs? So whatever else you want to know about our beautiful national game, just let me know. I'll be happy to talk about it.
No, just shut up.
No, I want to keep talking hockey with JP.
No, just he got lucky twice, and now he's trying
lucky. He's from Michigan.
Oh, come on. Yeah, I know. If he was from Ohio, I'd have more respect for him.
There you go. Now, Bob, I will say that I'm glad you brought that up, Bob, because I will tell you, I was out at the supermarket today here in Michigan, your second favorite city in the world, Ann Arbor.
Oh, God.
And I know that summer is here because I was able to buy the first college football preview magazine that I had seen yet. I was able to pick it up today. I am ready now, and I will fully acknowledge your Buckeyes are the greatest team in the land. They're probably going to win it again this year. They got about 9 quarterbacks, so I'm fully ready to give you credit for this. All I'm going to say, though, is at least we can agree the rivalry is back. Can we say that?
Ain't no rivalry. Michigan's got to get good again.
They're getting there, Bob.
Oh, they're not.
Throw us a win once a decade, and we'll be happy. Okay.
No, you're not getting that. I'm sorry, we're not. There's only one game that matters. You know that, and it comes in November.
Yes.
It's the Michigan Ohio State game. It's the only game that matters. If Ohio State goes 0-10 leading into that game, or 0-11, and beat Michigan, it's a good year. Now, if you win the national championship and Michigan, wins like 6 games or less, it's a fantastic year.
Well, and Bob, I have great respect for your team there, and I will say this:
the
offer stands. I said it for the Winter Classic. You can come and hang out with us in Ann Arbor.
No,
not happening. Shane Morosi here for that. You could also come for the Michigan Ohio State game this year. So the offer stands.
Well,
anytime you want to come visit, our door is open.
Is the game in Ann Arbor this year?
It is.
Go, Bob.
We'll see you. We'll see you here. U.S. Thanksgiving weekend, my friend. So we'll see you here.
Do you get a turducken? If you have a turducken, I'm coming.
You're invited too, Ken. You guys can both come down.
Well, I'm not going if Ken's going.
Crew here, it'll be great.
Do you serve turducken, JP, or do you just go with the turkey?
We usually just go with the turkey.
Oh, okay.
And I wish I could tell you that we had a whole lot of traditional, Italian customs that are weaved into our American Thanksgiving, but unfortunately, it's a pretty standard American Thanksgiving.
Nothing wrong with that.
So we don't know enough about this FBI investigation into the Cardinals thing yet. At least I don't think we do, to really analyze it with great depth. But isn't there a difference? So here's what I was going to say. I got kids who worked in professional sports organizations, and all kids today are computer geeks, and they can do a lot of things that you and I can't do, and they know stuff. And if some 20-year-old intern or guy with some menial job sitting in front of a computer working for the St. Louis Cardinals hacks into the Houston Astros system and starts downloading a bunch of minor league statistics or analysis or whatever it is, that's one thing. If the general manager does it or tells the guy to do it, that's an entirely different thing. Don't you agree?
I do. I do. And I really think in this case, Bob, and again, we are far from getting the full story here, but I will say it would really surprise me a lot if upper management had knowledge of this and at the end of the day would be implicated in any way in any wrongdoing here. And it is worth noting that the attorney that's representing the Cardinals in this matter did release a statement today to the Associated Press saying, quote, "With what we have done so far, I am 100% confident this does not touch upper management," and end quote, referring specifically to John Mozeliak and Bill DeWitt, of course, the GM and the president,
right,
chairman. So I tend to think that is going to be true, what he said. Because when you think about it, what what is the gain? What would be the motive of somebody in that high of a place to have anything to do with this? This to me seems much more likely to be something that came and originated from somebody who was in a station of the organization that had intimate knowledge of the real technical aspects of these player evaluation systems and was in some way upset at Jeff Luhnow, bitter, whatever word you want to say, either that he was concerned that the technology was going to be taken from the Cardinals to the Astros, whatever it may be. This seems to me to be something that would occur to an individual in that station of the organization with the very proximal knowledge of the technology at hand here than somebody as the chairman or the GM. I mean, Bill DeWitt Jr. ran the search to pick the next commissioner. He's one of the most influential people in the game of baseball. To think that he would have jeopardized that to have this sort of tit for tat as it relates to the evaluation system on a computer, it just doesn't. To me, that just doesn't hold water. Now, we've obviously been surprised by things, God knows, in the history of sports the last 10 or 15 years. But
New England Patriots.
I would be shocked. I would be totally floored if either of the DeWitts, frankly, Bill DeWitt Jr., Bill DeWitt III, or John Mozeliak was in any way involved in this case.
Just as a point of reference, do the Houston Astros have some kind of reputation of which I am not aware of being extraordinary in the scouting and drafting of talent?
Well, the reputation, Bob, and that's a great question. The reputation comes in the person of Jeff Luhnow, who, as has been pointed out by a lot of people around the game in the last 24 hours or so, was a very divisive figure when he was with the Cardinals, and now he is with the Astros as the GM and is a very divisive figure there, too, from the standpoint of, obviously, you go back to the negotiations last year with the number one pick, who wasn't signed. You go back even further to when he was with the Cardinals, and Walt Jocketty, who had just built the World Championship team, left because he was upset at the level of influence Luhnow was having on the scouting and player development. So he's a very controversial figure who helped develop the proprietary player evaluation system the Cardinals use. Now, the important distinction here is he had developed that technology for the Cardinals. And my understanding of the way corporate law usually works, intellectual property across business and certainly in baseball as well, if you develop that technology for that team, it stays with the team if you leave.
You don't own it.
Exactly. You can't yank it out of there and then bring it with you to Houston. So the thing that, and this was mentioned in Michael Schmidt's story in the New York Times, one of the possible motivations, again, according to what the New York Times has reported that law enforcement officials believe is the case, that individuals with the Cardinals were concerned that some of their proprietary information was going to be copied. I don't know if copied is the right word, but just sort of transposed into the Astros' new system. Now, it's quite possible that Jeff Luhnow would have developed a system for St. Louis. It stayed in St. Louis, but obviously the knowledge of how to build it stayed in his head, and he took that down to Houston and developed a similar system there. That to me, that makes sense and is, by the way, totally legal because you're allowed to still have your own thoughts. It's just you develop it in a different way in a different place. So I think that is what happened from the standpoint of the actual mechanism of that intellectual property. The question, though, is obviously what happened by the embittered employees with St. Louis, and did they feel as though they were trying to make him look bad or that actually they had a concern about their intellectual property as an organization then being copied, if you will. But obviously, and this point has been made by Ken Rosenthal, my colleague at Fox, among others, if that was an actual concern and that was a legitimate concern, the next phone call should have been to Major League Baseball about what had happened as opposed to whatever rogue activity existed.
Exactly, and that's why I wonder whether it's some goofy, snot-nosed 20-year-old punk who just overhears a conversation.
They knew the passwords.
Well, and yeah, here's some conversation and says, I'm going to take it upon myself to break into this file and find out exactly what this guy is doing and I'll be a hero.
Yeah.
You know, just misdirected enthusiasm for the job and initiative. And right.
See, I think that's,
but we don't know.
I think that's probably more accurate because when, I don't know about you guys, but when I hear the term someone hacked into something, I picture some guy with 90 computers typing away all day. But from what I'm seeing, this may just be someone who knew Jeff Luhnow's passwords, maybe took a stab at them, and, oh, man, I'm in.
Right.
But we don't know that yet. Regardless, though, JP, wouldn't you have to say Rob Manfred has to come down hard on this. I mean, this you just can't have this.
No, you got to do an investigation.
But you do
you got to find out who's doing it. Because if it's the 20-year-old.
But whoever it is never going to be in baseball again.
Well, the guy who did it is going to get fired. And if it was a group of guys that were involved, they're probably going to get fired. But tracing it to the top, it just seems inconceivable to me. Doesn't it to you, JP?
I totally agree with you, Bob. I can't imagine it's going to get to the top. And again, I think the punishment will be commensurate with whatever level of knowledge existed in the organization. I think that'll be the exact one-to-one relationship. However high up the knowledge was, then the penalty will increase. If it was again a rogue individual or two individuals at the lower levels that did this on their own because they thought it would be clever or funny or vengeful or whatever it would be, and upper management had no knowledge of it. Again, on some level, every boss is responsible for the actions of subordinates. That's just sort of how corporate culture works. But to say that MLB would throw the rule book at the Cardinals, I would imagine there could be some penalties. Sure, I mean there's no question about it. Whether it's transferring draft picks from the Cardinals to the Astros or a fine, but the reality is that MLB has very little in the way of team-on-team crime, if you will, to draw upon from a standpoint of any sort of precedent. And I checked on this with some sources yesterday about what is the history, what has MLB done in the past, obviously not in the realm of cybercrime, but in general, team-on-team offenses of this nature. And back in the 80s, there was a possible investigation of scouting information having changed hands between teams when individuals switched organizations, which ultimately nothing came of it. You have to almost go back to, and I heard this yesterday, back to the 1800s, the late 1800s, when actually teams were actually stealing the contracts from other clubs to title them to players. There was no reserve system in those days. They would just actually steal the paper and say, well, this player now belongs to me. This is almost how far back you have to go for there to be affronts of this nature going on between teams. And I would note, too, guys, one point I think is worth to making here is this is why when you talk about the intellectual property of teams, which is why you frequently, if a GM is hired from within another organization, he maybe gets to hire one or two guys. But they're very MLB puts controls on this in terms of how many people can be brought over by a new GM. They're really sensitive to an entire scouting staff being gutted immediately by somebody that leaves for a higher position elsewhere. So MLB, I think, is very cognizant of what it means to have intellectual property in baseball. And in fact, guys, I would say that this era of the game, when you talk about the analytics and the amount of stuff that's obviously these proprietary software systems and defensive metrics that are all unique to each individual team, I mean, this is information security is obviously only increasing as a concern in baseball, and I suspect we may hear some conversation pieces about how baseball teams can better protect themselves from threats in the future.
With John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports and MLB Network. Here in Toronto, we are bemoaning another blown save opportunity. And I have now turned the corner and decided, well, yes, you do. You need a stopper. This group collectively has not been able to perform adequately, although they pitched better lately.
Yeah.
But you need that guy. And so I've now joined that chorus. And the name that keeps coming up is Papelbon. And he has been quoted in the past as saying he'd be more than amenable to coming to Toronto. Do you think Pat Gillick's presidency of the Philadelphia Phillies presents a roadblock in any way, shape, or form from that happening?
It's a good question. Good question. I had not actually even thought of it in those terms about if that would limit the ability of those two teams to get together and make a trade. I would say this. First of all, my colleague at Fox, Ken Rosenthal, has reported that Andy MacPhail is now in the mix to become the Phillies' permanent president. So obviously Gillick is there now, but it's unclear for how much longer he will be there.
Sure.
And I think in general, Bob, I would say that the Phillies are going to make the best deal they can. And they're in a position where they're under such scrutiny now, and it's taken them so long to initiate this rebuilding project that many people around the game said they needed to do a long time ago. And really, they have not traded Hamels yet. They have not traded Papelbon. They have not traded a couple other big-name guys. Ryan Howard certainly comes to mind as well. Utley is still there. They did trade Rollins, but that was a smaller deal. So they have this large, big sweeping changes that must be made to make themselves competitive in the long term. I got to think they'll make the best trade they can with any club, if it's Toronto, if it's whoever it is. And I think in a certain sense, the reality is the Blue Jays in the last several years, they have not really made a lot of big-time deadline moves. Now, is that because the players didn't line up? Is it financial? We don't know. But I think on a certain level there, if the Jays are able to look at the situation and say, you know what, I'm comfortable giving up this prospect or that prospect in the trade, the Phillies have been indicating to teams they're willing to kick in money if it allows them to get back the prospects they need. So if the prospect is the prospect price is comfortable for the Jays, I tend to think that the Phillies would kick in enough money to make it worth their while. And I agree with you. Papelbon is a great fit. Clifford would make some sense. Aroldis Chapman. They're fortunate in Toronto that there's a number of options out there. But, again, this is not a front office that has made a lot of moves to the deadline before.
No, you're right.
Documented. And so that has to change, because when you look at it, they're only two games out in probably the most winnable American League East we have seen in a very long time, guys. So, I know it's easy to say go for it when we know what the Jays did when they traded Syndergaard and Darno to the Mets. I understand how that all played out. But this is maybe the one year where you can really make a go at it because of the way the rest of the division looks.
So what are the names that would entice the Phillies to eat some salary, in your opinion, JP?
I think Norris would probably have to be a name they would consider moving. I think that would have to be part of the conversation, I believe. The mm-hmm. Phillies are going to want high-level pitching and or position players that are close to the major leagues and or already there. If that's a Devin Travis, again, that would surprise me if the Jays were willing to give him up, but I think it's going to take a prospect of that level. It's going to have to hurt.
I agree. I mean,
that's the reality of it. It's going to have to hurt, and I think the Phillies are going to have enough teams interested that you're going to have to give up, you know, the better guys in your organization to make a trade and to do it. It's just a question of how desperate the Jays are to try to solidify that bullpen and get to the playoffs this year. If it's a situation where they're looking at it and say, you know what, we're getting closer and we feel like we're going to be able to get there in the next 2 or 3 years, then you take maybe a more conservative approach. But if you look at it and say, hey, we got to make it this year, we now have the longest postseason drought in baseball after the Royals made it last year, we're desperate. We have to get in there. We have to make the playoffs. If that's the thought process, then I think you give some serious thought to giving up one of your better prospects. And again, Norris would have to be somebody you would think about in that context. The one point that I'd make about the Phillies that could make it a bit more amenable, guys, is you saw what happened last year when the A's and the Cubs did the deal involving Addison Russell going to Chicago. So the A's got Samardzija and Hamill. So if you're reluctant to give up a Norris or a Travis or one of your better guys for a rental, then maybe you couple it up with a second guy. Maybe it's not just a Papelbon, it's a Papelbon and one more piece to make it more palatable to your organization. So I think that's one thing to watch. Would they be able to pair up with the Phillies on two guys? I don't think Hamels would waive his no trade to come to Toronto. I don't. But I think there are some different combinations that could be workable there with the Phillies.
Well, that was going to be my next question, was could you see a Hamels Papelbon duo coming to Toronto, because it would answer both the questions for the Toronto Blue mm-hmm. Jays, and I think would give the Blue Jays the opportunity to be more comfortable in selling a significant portion of their future, because it solves two problems and not just one. Now, Hamels has a no-trade clause. He's indicated no desire to come to the Toronto Blue Jays, but when he was asked about that last, the Toronto Blue Jays were 5 or 6 games out and didn't look like they were much of a contender. You know yourself that players' opinion on organizations changes with the future or the plight of that organization. The Blue Jays are right in it right now. I wonder if Hamels rethinks that.
You know, it's a great question. I think my sense of it is Hamels is comfortable in Philadelphia from a family, personal standpoint. He's already won a World Series. He's got a World Series MVP trophy at home. And teams that are very appealing to him geographically, his wife is from Missouri, so a team like the Cardinals, they need a starting pitcher too. Teams on the West Coast, close to where he's from, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Giants. So I think there are enough of those teams in there that I think Hamels will be reluctant to waive his no-trade clause for anybody who's not on his list. He's going to say, you know what? The Phillies realize they're going to have to trade me, and enough of the teams that I really, really want to go to because of personal reasons are interested, then something's going to work out. I bet you that. I would imagine that is his calculus right now. But I would add to your concept, Bob, I think it's a great concept. And one team that I think would make sense in this context would be the Reds, because the Reds have Chapman, and the Reds have Cueto, and the Reds have Leak. Mm-hmm. And that's where you could pair up. The Chapman is you have under control for next year as well. Leak and Cueto are both free agents after this season. So that's where you get the half a year plus then a year and a half. So it's really sort of 2 years of control when you add up both players of whatever pitching you're getting. And that's where I think Leak is a very athletic pitcher. I think, you know, Cueto is the bigger name for sure. But I think both of those guys, Cueto or Leak, I think would fit well with the Jays. And Chapman, obviously, would fit great with the Jays. So I think that team, if we're talking about a two-for-one scenario, that team, I think, because of the lack of a no-trade, makes a lot more sense for the Jays to pursue than the Phillies would, because I just don't see Hamels waving the no trade to come to Toronto.
And at what Hamels is owed about $70 million on his contract. So I mean does he even enter the conversation for Toronto?
That's a great question. Whereas Leak and Cueto, more manageable dollars up after this year. Chapman arbitration for next year at a pretty reasonable rate for a closer of his caliber. So I think when you look at the big picture, I think that the near term financial commitment of these clubs, I think you'd be able to probably make a deal work. I really do think if you're comfortable with the prospect price going to the Reds, let's say, I think the Reds are in a situation where they could probably pay up some of the money to make sure they get the prospects they want. Well, we're at a time in the game, guys, where so many franchises are healthy financially that the desperate salary dump on July 30th and 31st, we don't see it as much anymore. It's not as much of a motivation because teams are making money.
Yeah.
So they're willing to, in many cases, pay down. Or, hey, look, I've already budgeted that I'm going to have to pay for this guy the rest of the year. I'll keep paying him. You just give me your best guys. And that's where I think ultimately I think we'll see a lot of deals like that happen, I think, towards the end of July.
Real quickly, the worst nightmare for Major League Baseball in terms of the All-Star game is emerging.
Yes.
We have, if the All-Star game were played today, there'd be eight, count them, eight Kansas City Royals and Mike Trout starting for the National or for the American League. Mm-hmm. At what point is baseball, at what point is this new commissioner going to realize that this is a mess? It has really been a mess for a long time. And fan balloting, while an intriguing thought, simply does not work. When do they make that call?
Well, a couple things, Bob. Rob Manfred did say yesterday to reporters in Boston that he is willing to consider other alternatives to picking the All-Star starters if in fact this thing goes the direction it's going with respect to the number of Royals being elected. So he has indicated he's open-minded about this. Now, I agree with you from the standpoint of, in a very simple sense, the All-Star game tries to be two things. It counts for home field advantage, but it's also for the fans in an exhibition and where the fans get to control who plays. Those two things are difficult to marry, because if it counts, then you should be putting your best players on the field from pitch one. And if it's an exhibition, it should be an exhibition. That's the dilemma that I think baseball goes back and forth between. I understand why it is the way it is, but that's where it's at right now. I do think the one thing I would say in baseball's favor, or in favor of the current arrangement, as much as it really seems backward right now. Number one, the Royals did win the American League last year, so it's not as though this is a last-place team that squeezed a bunch of guys on there through some balloting fluke. I mean, they are a good team. They're a good team now. They were a good team last year. And the other part is we now have the player ballot picks just as many spots on the roster as the fan ballot. So you have the input of your peers is very heavily weighted. I think for the most part, usually the right players go at the end, but I agree with you right now. If eight Kansas City Royals are there, probably not ideal for the game in terms of showcasing the best new talent in the sport. And obviously this is the first year, Bob, where there's been no paper ballots whatsoever. It's been all online this year, and obviously it's been a very controversial situation. So much like the NHL All-Star game with the strong Latvian contingent there for Gergensens, right?
Zemgus Gergensens, nice call. Nice call, JP.
Well, see,
Latvia, Kansas City.
Well, I mean, Kansas City is not one of the largest markets in the country. And therefore, so this is pure ballot stuffing. This is not, with due respect to the Kansas City players and to their fans, this is not what was intended. These are not the eight best players in the American League by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
I could give you an argument, maybe one or two of them. Maybe. But I can also make a case that no Kansas City Royals are should be guaranteed an all-star spot.
Well, here's what
name the guy.
Well, listen, I think, look, Sal Perez was an all-star last year. Hosmer has played like an all-star. Omar Infante, I agree with you, not an all-star. Elcides Escobar, numbers are down a little bit this year, but he played all 162 last year, was phenomenal last year. Moustakas, playing like an all-star. Gordon, he's been an all-star. Lorenzo Cain, he's been playing like an all-star since last September, October. So, you know, again, I Kendrys Morales, decent numbers, but not as good as Nelson Cruz. So I would say two of the guys in terms of Morales and Infante, you're right, probably should not be all-star starters. And again, Gordon not having a great year either. So, but I do think about half of them are legitimate. And I think Cain is totally legitimate. Hosmer, Moustakas, and Perez, pretty good players. So again, it's funny that we're talking about it because usually we hear the complaint about, oh, baseball is so large market favored and the Red Sox and Yankees dominate everything and none of the other markets get their say. Well, Kansas City's getting their say right now. And again, they're the reigning American League champions. They got their managers managing the team. You know, maybe it's my Midwestern bias here, but I have less of an issue with it than a lot of people do. And I think ultimately the most of the players that deserve to be there are going to be there. Not everyone, because it never works out that way.
All right.
But despite this, most of the right guys, I think, are going to be there in Cincinnati.
You know, I don't have that confidence. Next time you're on this program, assuming we invite you back.
Okay.
Remind me to discuss this again, because I don't have time to get into...
We didn't even get into the hanging chads on a number of the Sal Perez ballots.
Well, exactly. And, you know,
I was just glad that I remembered Gergensen's name. I was struggling there for a minute. I was like, yeah, Latvia, Gergensen, there you go. It was right on the tip of my tongue.
Morosi? Good luck to you and those crummy Michigan Wolverines.
Sounds great. Well,
see you soon.
Congratulations again to your Buckeyes, Bob. It's an honor, as always, to be on the show. Thanks
for having me. Well, get used to saying that. John Paul Morosi of Fox Sports and MLB Network.